Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michelle, how's it going?
It's hectic. How's it going on your end?
Pretty good.
Good.
How's that deck looking?
I'd like to begin by asking you a few questions about how this whole mess got started. Do you remember seeing him for the first time?
Yeah. You guys here on vacation?
Certainly are.
Welcome to the end of the world.
And it grows, and it grows, and it feeds me like it's never fed me before.
Well, it doesn't look good because the new boards that have put down, now it needs to be painted. But evidently, if you put down treated lumber, you have to wait a while to paint it. So now it's kind of patchwork, right? But it sure is, like, sturdy and nice, so I'm happy.
Are you going to paint it that Marie purple like everyone else is on your block?
Purple?
It's a Breaking Bad joke.
Oh, definitely not. Let me tell you what we did last time, though. We found a light color. We thought it was going to be like a, you know, like a light wood color to paint it. The last time we sealed, you have to do it every 2 or 3 years. And when we put it on, it ended up being like Tennessee orange. And so we've had to like live with that because it's super expensive to do that on this big deck and buy this stuff that seals the wood, you know, and plus pay somebody to do it because it's huge. And so we've had to live with this like Tennessee orange, which I love Tennessee, but I didn't really want my deck that color. But now we get to go back to dark, and plus it got dirty easy and everything, so I'm excited to get it back.
Out here, everyone just has redwood. They just leave it the wood. They don't paint it. They just leave it the wood grain.
Well, we don't paint it, but you have to, like, seal it, right? Because if you don't seal it, it'll rot.
You just said you painted it Tennessee orange.
No. We sealed it. We did not deliberately do that. We sealed it with a lighter, you know, with, like, a light. You pick the color of, like, your seal. It's not just, I don't know what we're doing. That's not my thing.
I think you need to get your story straight, Michelle.
I guess. But anyway, it's not like paint. It's some kind of wood sealant. So.
Well, Michelle, I have a treat for you.
Okay.
Here, listen.
Coffea exotica, all of which contain no caffeine or alcohol, only naturally enhanced essence flavors. So LaCroix sparkling waters and LaCroix Curate sparkling waters. Gluten-free, vegan, kosher, non-GMO. Whole30 approved, environmentally friendly, perpetually sustainable, the cans, recyclable, the cans. Whole Simmons family loves it. It's a healthier alternative for you and your lifestyle. Available nationwide. For more information and a full list of retailers, go to LaCroixWater.com.
So, LaCroix, you were right.
That's how we've, but who knows, you know.
And it's vegan and sustainable.
And, right, Whole30 approved. What more could you want?
Michelle, what's going on with this show? I read a Sarah Treem interview between our last podcast and this one. And
okay.
She talks a little bit about it. I don't know how old this interview was. I'll put the link to it in the show notes. But
okay.
She says this show is about a generational trauma. So children carry the problems that their parents, they inherit their psychological and problems their parents hand to them, essentially, and they carry it to their children. We kind of figured that much out, right?
Well, yeah, I actually kind of believe that, don't you?
Probably.
I don't think they have to, but I think a lot of times that's what ends up happening. However, I hope she's not saying in that interview that Trevor is gay because of this, which is kind of what Helen was saying in that one episode anyway. Like, this is Noah's fault. Because he left the family and stuff. Or she was actually saying, this isn't Noah's fault. I don't want him to feel bad about it. But you know what I mean? She was insinuating that Noah would think it was his fault.
Well, maybe that may be or not be. And that is bad to insinuate something like that. But however, Trevor is an abomination in this show. He's unwatchable. Unfrickin' watchable. Not because he's gay or straight. What?
I don't think it's his fault. Like the actor's fault. I think it's the writer's fault. I'm going to agree with you. But what do you... Tell me.
It's just we'll get to it. Okay. it. I don't want to go through it twice.
Okay.
Sarah Treem also said we'll find out about. She's talking about this season now. The end. The last season. We'll find out about Allison's death or suicide. And like I said, she's gonna say that the daughters. The reason Joni's mean to her daughters is because of the way she interprets what Allison did to her. She's been abandoned. She thinks Allison committed suicide and didn't care about her and left her behind without giving an F about her and just abandoned her.
Right.
That's why she throws away. Essentially, she throws Allison away at the end of this one. That's my interpretation, but that's what I think she's trying to portray.
No, I agree.
Sarah Treem makes a correlation with Whitney and her life and Sarah's life as a girl becoming a woman when she was younger, no one took her seriously, and she thinks Whitney's going through that now. That's kind of profound, I guess.
I guess. I'm not seeing that in Whitney. I don't think that's... I certainly didn't get that.
Well, Michelle, your life has always been easy, so what do you know?
Okay.
Sarah Treem says, Colin is going to surprise us, and Dominic West is going to surprise us.
Yeah, Dominic West can't surprise me. You can't do something for 15 years and then surprise me that you've changed because I'm not going to buy it.
Well, you're a lot like Helen, Michelle. A lot like Helen.
You well,
got
thank
me all choked
you.
Up.
Most no, of the time, I mean that's that, a compliment.
I mean that in a bit of a throwing shade on you because you can't forgive, you can't forget anything he's done and just let him. Try to be good. He may not come all the way back, but you got to let him. I mean, he's trying.
Is he? Is that what he's doing? Is that what he's doing? He's trying? He's trying by planting evidence in Sasha's house?
Well, he's an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, that's not trying, though, Mike. There's trying, and then there's sabotaging your own self.
He went to jail for her for years, 3 years.
He's
shuttling the kids around while she's screwing around.
No. He went to jail for Allison. Allison's the one who pushed Scotty in front of that car.
Helen would have been in trouble too, Michelle. She was driving drunk.
Absolutely, but it would have been both of them. It wasn't just for Helen.
Well, I didn't say it was just for Helen. I said it was for Helen. You said it was for Allison. Anyway, we don't need to get off on an argument here, but we are.
Yeah, but there we go.
I don't know. I think, and you know, Noah's a faulty character. She's a faulty. There are faults in all these people. To totally not give Noah any way back at all, any ground at all, I think is not good.
No, well, I'm not even saying that, you know. Noah could have absolutely redeemed himself. If it had started before halfway into the last episode, there's not going to be anything unless they jump forward in time like they did with Joni, unless they jump forward in time for at least like 2 or 3 episodes and show us that Noah's changed.
What would Noah have to do in your eyes to be changed and look at him at least neutrally?
There's no way they can do that in the present time.
Okay, because what in the future, what would he have had to do over time to make you feel more positive about him?
They would have to show us, like, I mean, this is one instance, obviously, but they would have to show me that 25 years down the road, when they're sitting in Margaret and Bruce's house, he and Helen holding hands, sipping coffee in the morning or something with grandkids running around them and talking about, you know, what a great life they've had for the last... Helen talking about what a great life they've had for the last 20
years. But that's not how life works, Michelle.
Then how can he redeem himself?
He can redeem himself and not be Helen's partner.
He can, but how is that redemption in the way we're talking about? He doesn't have to be Helen's partner to be a good person, but you were asking me how he could redeem himself in my eyes. In my eyes, the whole thing is about the affair, obviously. And to redeem that part of himself, that's what he would have to do. He could still be a good person and move on, but he's not going to have redemption, as I see it, for the hurt and, like you were saying, the generational pain that he's caused everybody.
Unless he gets back together with Helen.
Unless he makes it right with her.
Well, how could he make it right with... Oh, okay, so that's one scenario. How could he make it right with her and not be her partner? Could he?
Yeah, I don't think so. Not at this point. I think if they had shown us more of him trying to make it right in some other way...
Well, they're co-parenting three kids. Four kids? Three kids? I forget who's who.
Four. They have four. But they're only co-parenting three of them. We don't ever see Martin anymore. We haven't seen Martin much at all. They kind of are, but they're not doing a very good job of it, except in Noah's view. Of course, he's like the, you know, savior to everything. And where's all the sexual stuff coming in with Noah? Everything about him is always sex.
Well, he's being written by a woman, a liberal woman, who is showing an exaggeration of an alpha male. She talks a little bit about that too. That Sasha, she either says Sasha or Furcat. One of them is out alphaing Noah. Maybe it was Sasha, which I didn't see. I didn't agree with it. That I don't think Sasha's very alpha. I don't think Noah's that alpha either. But anyway, Michelle, with all this said, with all of this, all due respect to our glorious writer, Sarah Treem, and for all the dumb jokes I've told about her, what message is she trying to give us as a storyteller? It's got to be more than just this generational inheritance of problems that children have from affairs. What compelled her to write this story? What do you think?
Well, I mean, maybe like what you said, like she's kind of putting herself in some of the characters, and she is showing the generational thing, the generational pain, and she wants to do some social justice warrior kind of stuff. She wants to constantly show, and not just show, but exaggerate.
She has an agenda, political, not corporate, but like a liberal agenda of just getting the climate change.
It actually feels that way to me. It feels that way. It feels like, and it's almost comical. It's so over the top. Like with Trevor, it's so over the top. He changes. You know, it wasn't very long ago that he wasn't even admitting that he was gay, and we didn't know for sure. And now he's like, I mean, it's just so over the top. In my view, but
I mean,
I don't know.
A woman psychologist at the end of the Sarah Treem interview commented, they had like some comments at the end of it, and she said that women at some points in their lives have to both give in and remain apart from parts of their lives. They have to give in and remain apart, you know, at the same time from parts of their lives. Do you think that's true?
In what instance? What was she referring
to? She's just speaking of Sarah Treem's story about the affair here. That, I don't know, Helen, like, detaching from her family. Now she's kind of becoming the, whatever she is, the assistant to Sasha or the decorator or whatever the hell she is. But she's kind of carving her own space away from her family. Even though she's smack in the middle of it?
Yeah, I don't know if I even believe that yet, because I haven't seen her take on it. I've only seen Noah's take. All I've seen is her say, no, she's not going to do it. No, this isn't what she wants to do. No, she has too much family stuff going on. And then we hear Noah's take on it, and she's just basically abandoned her kids. So I'll reserve judgment for that. I'm just not really sure what it means to... you know, distance yourself, or how did you phrase that?
That you have to, well, the psychologist woman said that, but you have to both give in and remain apart from parts of your life.
I don't know.
She's clearly in the middle of it. She's cuckooing Sierra's baby and taking care of her crazy mother and dealing with kids and dealing with Vic's death and whatever. Sasha's helping Sasha with his story and Noah's story. I don't like Noah getting his freaking story stolen from him either. I'm gonna stand up for Noah in this episode.
If that's what happened, that's certainly how Noah sees it. Remember last time, that's not how Sasha made it sound. Sasha made it sound like Noah attacked him because he wanted to change something for the movie. And he's the director of the movie. And, of course, we don't know what was said ahead of time or what kind of rights was given to who to change what. But
well, whoever they were, the agents, showing Noah the copy, he can't interpret that incorrectly, can he?
He interpreted the photo of Vic. I don't know. Maybe not. And I don't either. If that's true, I don't like that at all. And if Noah's version of Sasha's true, I don't like him at all. But I just don't believe him yet. And I'm not fond of Sasha either. For some reason, I've given the impression that I'm a Sasha fan, and I'm not. I'm just not ready to write him off yet. That's all. I don't know him well enough to do that.
All right, Michelle. Well, I was a little surprised when we saw the front of Helen's house as they started this episode. It looked like just a regular house on the block, that giant mansion. I guess it's got a back-facing cliff and cliff-facing. It just looked like a normal kind of medium-income house on the block, but it's really the front of that mansion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's because it's on the cliff, as we see, you know, in the back.
Like we all are on the cliff.
Excuse me?
Like we all are on the cliff.
But, okay, so we start off with Noah, and he's going to get Trevor and Stacey because he's the savior all the time to take them to school for Helen because she has a meeting. We find out it's Halloween. In his version, the kids always love him and run up to him and stuff like that. In Helen's version, that rarely happens. So that's an interesting little take.
Well, not Trevor.
I'm trying to think.
Trevor's all worried about his stockings, little bastard.
Oh, yeah. But he talks to him. He communicates with him. But Noah finds out that they're all going to Sasha's party tonight, but Noah is not invited. And Stacy gets real defensive over this. She's like, well, if you're not going, I'm not going.
Stacy might be the only character I like anymore in this show. She turned out to be a pretty sweet little kid.
And she's I don't think they show us enough about Stacy.
They don't show her much at all, you're right. She's a mini Whitney, too. She looks just like Whitney.
She really does. That's really cool. I thought you would have liked Whitney, though, in this episode.
Well, I like Whitney. Well, I don't like what Sarah Treem's doing to Whitney. I kind of do like Whitney, but I don't like how Whitney's... we'll get to Whitney.
Okay. We will. We have a whole half a show about her. But they start to reminisce about being the Soloways back in the day. And they talk about a kid who was accidentally brought home by Helen on Halloween because she thought somebody in a character was somebody else. And that the kid didn't want to leave once he was there because even being an imposter Soloway is better than being anyone else. And as Noah's listening to all this, he's like, I mean, you can see it like wash over his face, and he's loving this. He's remembering the good that he had. And then Helen comes slow-mo sashaying out of her room on the phone with her assistant, and Noah's like taken aback by her, and she shushes him, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, she comes down like Princess Grace in her elegant whatever dress that was and her nice shoes.
Yeah.
Dressed to kill. Kill the world.
She looked good. And Noah apologizes to her for the way he acted at the karaoke bar. So presumably he hasn't talked to her since. And he says he just wants a good co-parenting relationship. And Helen's like, well, finally, we want the same thing.
So, Michelle, there's a trope in this scene that I hate, and it happens a lot in shows and movies. What can you guess what it is? I'm going to make you work for this podcast, Michelle.
Okay, that's okay. Give me a hint.
No, I'm going to give you a hint. Give me a hint.
I don't know. I'm not in your mind.
You say that at
I
your law school test?
At my law? No. Can't say as I did.
The thing I hate know. That they do a lot is, like, Margaret makes them a full breakfast. The kids take a couple sips of orange juice and leave. I hate that, man, when they make a nice breakfast for people and they don't even eat it. They just take a sip and they rush out because they're in a hurry.
They've done that this whole show.
They do
You're
that
right.
everywhere in all TV mm-hmm. and movies.
Yeah, it's like all this, you know, somebody goes to all this trouble. Not only is she going to the trouble to do it, she is bitching about it.
Yeah, you know, Margaret's being Margaret. I also don't like the nonsensical things. Like, why does Margaret takes out the trash by taking the whole plastic basket out? What's she going to do, throw the whole thing away?
I don't know.
You take the bag out of the basket, the plastic part, and throw the bag away. You don't take the whole plastic thing.
Maybe she's never taken the trash out before, well, so she doesn't that. Know how to do it. And then Trevor makes some comment about needing lace for his garter belt.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. And he's ugly, too. He's very disrespectful to Margaret. I mean, Margaret's...
He's a punk. He's a spoiled brat. He's gotten everything handed to him his whole life. That might be another piece of this show that we just have to acknowledge is there for part of the story. Like, Helen was a spoiled brat. Helen had rich parents. She got her boutique handed to her by her parents. Helen had a pretty easy life because she was born into affluence. And the kids kind of have that now. And Whitney's learning about real life. I mean, it's kind of a good lesson. It's kind of a good piece of the story. But Trevor is unbearable to watch.
Well, Whitney was for a while, though, right?
Not like Trevor.
All that season with her and Furcat was really difficult for me.
Okay, why is Furcat back? Why dredge back up Furcat?
I don't know.
We made it was so distasteful to even think of it that way. We made a joke about it a couple episodes ago. Couldn't remember his name, and now here he is back in the center of things.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It could be a take on the fact that Helen kept giving Noah chances. So Whitney is repeating the same mistakes. It could be that Helen never gave up on Noah, so Whitney's feeling that same kind of, I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
Well,
but
only got five more episodes to figure it out, or four.
So Noah comes into school, and Joe is a cowboy sheriff dude.
Waldo. He should be Where's Waldo? That's a total mistake disguise, or disguise mistake.
I don't disagree with you. That's good. Yeah, he should. He goes to find Noah a costume because all the teachers must dress and hands him an Us magazine that has Sasha's romance with Helen captured on the cover. And then he comes back into his room with the costume and discusses how he thinks Noah wants Helen back. He can tell he's jealous. He tells Noah to find Sasha's kryptonite. We see that again and again in this, like a way to find a way to break up Helen and Sasha.
Pretty unprofessional from one supervisor/boss to an employee to engage in helping that employee find a way to break up with their spouse or whatever, their ex.
Well, yeah, and he talks about how, you know, they're all perverted and goes into these pretty graphic details, but everything about Noah's thing is sex. Sex, 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 sex this time.
Well, Margaret's worse than Waldo.
According to Noah. I mean, can you picture... Anyway,
Michelle, I get the feeling you don't trust Noah.
I don't trust him at all. I think he's losing it. The last thing we saw was him, like, screaming outside. For all we know, he's, like, in a straitjacket somewhere.
He's just trying to be heard, Michelle. Just want somebody to listen to him.
But Joel brings up, what's the one thing that's going to get Helen out of bed with Sasha? And Noah's like, I don't know. He kind of admits, I am jealous. I do want her back. I don't know. And Joel says, I bet you do. So whatever that is, do you know? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
What?
It's the red bra.
Cheating?
It's the red bra. Yeah. He literally gets the exact same piece of undergarment that Helen found on him with Allison. Right. And does the exact same thing. He doesn't put it in the drawer. He puts it under the pillow. That's a little different. But it's a red bra. I mean, it's literally the same thing.
Yeah.
So, not that Sarah Treen would ever hit us over the head and not be subtle, but that's what she did.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought it had to be more than that, right? I mean, it has to be more than
just... It's
infidelity. Okay, so no,
Noah should consult with you, Michelle, because you seem to know what gets you riled up about him. You could give him some great advice as to how to make Helen mad at him, or mad at Sasha.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know if I could give advice on how to make her not mad.
Michelle from TN, anger consultant.
Okay, so Noah goes into the lunch or dinner meeting with, I thought it was his attorneys.
The agents.
Yeah.
Representatives. Yeah.
But these are the people that, and he makes it known that he called this meeting. Noah tells him he's been banned by Sasha from the set and he wants them to smooth it over so he can go back to work. And they really coddle and appease him, right? Oh, you're doing so great. And I understand you want to be there. It shows you're interested. It shows you have your hand on the pulse, blah, blah, blah. But let slip that the movie is going to say that it was written by Sasha and Noah. And Noah says that Sasha cannot have this writing credit. And I agree with Noah in that instance. That's what you were talking about.
Well, they're
not
only the reps of Noah, they're the reps of Sasha, too, which seem...
Yeah, that's a conflict.
Correlated in a very negative way.
Yeah, that sounds very conflicted. I don't know how you could do that.
And it seemed to me that they missed the entire point of Noah's having this meeting, and they just throw fuel onto the flames of his concerns that, oh, don't worry, look how good this looks, and it's Sasha's name on it. It's like they missed the... Noah's feeling very misheard, misunderstood.
Yeah, I think he's feeling strong-armed out of everything that's important to him in his life. His wife, his kids, or his ex-wife, obviously his kids, and his work, his life's work. So, yeah, I would agree with that. So then Noah's driving away, and to add insult to injury, gets the phone call that shows up as Helen, but it's Jocelyn, her assistant, from Helen Butler's office. So she's gone back to her maiden name as far as to work, right?
I didn't know her maiden name. I didn't catch that. But yeah, I guess this girl's just using Helen's phone because she comes up as Helen.
So she wants Noah to go pick up the lace for her son's garter belt, and the son can explain if he needs more detail. Noah asks to speak to Helen, and she makes it known that Helen said no, she's not going to talk to him.
Michelle, the next time I see this woman or meet this assistant woman, I would murder her.
Well, she can't help it. This is all
Helen's
doing.
She's a bitch, though. She could be nicer about it. She could say, look, I'm sorry. She didn't want me to convey that. Or she didn't want me to say anything about this. She just hangs up on him.
Well, she's obviously right there with her. Because she's like, hang on. And then she comes right back and goes, I'm sorry, I can't find her, or I don't have her. I don't know, something weird. So she has to do what Helen wants. She works for Helen.
Murder. I'm just saying, murder.
So Noah.
Michelle, would you ever trust anyone, including your own personal assistant, to have your phone? Or do you think Helen just handed her the phone for 1 second to do this call?
No, I can't really see giving my phone to somebody to do work stuff with. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not that I wouldn't trust them. There's nothing on my phone that's, you know, that would be an issue, but it's just kind of a privacy thing.
Well, that's my point. Maybe she just handed it to her, though. She's not that used to having an assistant yet.
Or maybe it's just like to show that she just didn't want to talk to Noah at all. You know, she'll even go as far as to give her phone away to... so she doesn't have to speak to him. But Noah gets back to the house with tulle, not lace.
What's that? What's the difference?
You don't know the difference in lace and tulle?
Michelle, my garters are plain. I don't usually frill them up like that.
Well, you know what lace is, obviously. It's lace, right? And Tool is almost like a...
By the way, why do you have to say that like I'm a freaking idiot? Wouldn't you be more disappointed if I knew the difference?
I just thought everybody knew the difference in lace and Tool. I really did. I don't know. It's just like I was, and I wasn't saying it toward you. I was kind of saying it toward Noah because I couldn't believe he didn't know. First of all, what's he going to do? Go into the store? I mean, he had to go purchase it. So did he like walk around to try to find it, or did he not go in there and say, I need some lace, and they're going to hand him Tool? I don't think so. Tool is like, picture a screen porch, right? It's like the fabric equivalent of screen. And then lace is, of course, delicate and ornate. So it's completely different.
All right.
Anyway, but
Trevor's still a bitch. Trevor is a little bitch. I can't watch him for long without scratching my eyes out.
Okay, tell me about your disdain for Trevor now that we're here.
Because he's a punk. He's not grateful. He's nagging about everything. He's worried about, well, all this other real trauma in life. His mom's significant other died, what, months ago?
Yeah.
He's worried about his costume more than anything. More than anybody else's problems, his problems have to take charge. And his problem isn't like, Mom, my oxygen tank for my emphysema ran out. It's freaking lace for his Halloween costume.
Well, yeah, he did that last time to Helen, remember? And I got really upset at it, where she went to his play that he and Brooklyn had put on, and she was, I mean, it was 3 months after Vic died, and she was exhausted, and she fell asleep, and he was really ugly to her about it.
Yeah, he's a bitch. He won't let his grandmother drive him because he can't be seen with her. It's just, he's untenable. I can't stand the kid.
Well, then Margaret walks in and tells Noah that Helen's working late and she's supposed to take the kids to the party, and it's all ridiculous because Bruce has Alzheimer's. Why is she there?
She's fairly untenable, too. She's there to voice her. This is all like, I need me, 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 me. Everybody look at me. Everybody's doing it. She's there to...
Three generations of it there, yeah.
Not be alone, maybe, to help with the kids. I don't know how she's helping. She's adding more need to the equation than anything.
Yeah, but how can she be away from her husband, who's very ill, to... I understood for a little while after Helen lost Vic, but, I mean, this is several months now.
I don't know.
That seems like a long time to stay out there, unless she brought Bruce with her. I don't know.
She's trying to rally troops to go back with her to help with her, I guess. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I think we're leading toward that anyway. I think you're right. We're seeing it more and more. You said that last time. But she asked Noah, she goes, Bruce has Alzheimer's, and what are you doing about it? And I was just like, what a question, right?
Well, Noah stands up for Helen here. She says, Helen won't help me, but he says, don't pick on Helen. She's in a low time now. She needs support. Helen is really the person that needs support more than anyone here, and maybe the kids. But the kids aren't really mourning Nick like Helen is. Helen needs help, and Noah blocks Margaret from trying to inject her need into the equation and tries to say, consider Helen. I think he supports Helen here.
He does. Yeah, he absolutely does in his view of it.
Oh, you always got to qualify it, don't you, Michelle?
I have to, because we don't see it the other way. But Trevor asks what time his mom's coming home, and Margaret says she doesn't care about you anymore. You know, I mean, it's just horrible. And then this is where Noah scolds Margaret for doing that. And then Trevor pitches his fit about Margaret taking him to the party because he can't go to the coolest party to ever be thrown and have his grandma taken.
In Malibu, yeah.
And then we find out that, so of course Noah, always the rescuer, always the one to fix things, in his view.
I sense some sarcasm, Michelle.
Maybe, says, it's okay, I'll take you, come on, traffic's going to be bad. And we find out Stacy's locked in the bathroom because she has evidently gotten her period for the first time. And she's in the bathroom, and she just wants her mom.
Trevor had his first period, too.
Why didn't Stacy just call her mom?
Maybe she won't pick up the phone. Who knows?
Okay. I didn't think about that. Noah calls Trevor an Uber and says, don't do drugs. And then Noah asks Margaret to go get Stacy the stuff, and she wants to know why she has to do everything. And this is where he, you know, kind of stands up and says, because I'm going to stay with Stacy in case she needs me. And then Margaret's proud of him, and Stacy whispers through the door, thanks.
So, Michelle, I got some menstruation math here I need help with.
Okay.
He asks Margaret for help, and she says, dude, I'm 76 years old. Well, is Helen too old? Helen's 50-something, probably. She's probably too old, too, huh?
Well, remember, she was going through menopause before. Remember, she was late.
How would I ever remember that, Michelle?
Well, because they were trying to have a baby, supposedly. She was trying to have a baby with Vic, and then she was late, so she tested. And he's like, that's ridiculous. You're going through menopause. So that was probably a year ago at this point. But, I mean, there could be some stuff left in the house. So, I mean, you know, you don't usually... It doesn't always just stop all at one time. A lot of times you'll stop for several months or whatever, but...
But if they're in a relatively new house with Vic, she wouldn't have moved all that stuff from... I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
No, they were in that house when that was going on.
Well, you've got a better memory than me, or maybe your rewatch helped you, but I don't remember any of that. Anyway, sorry. I was curious. Why didn't he just say, well, what about Helen? I mean, I could see a guy not knowing if he's been separated from Helen for however many years now, maybe not knowing the exact math of that.
No, I mean, that's, you know, that's fine not to know.
It's better not to know.
Okay. So then we see Margaret with her bag of sex toys. And tells Noah to sneak it into the bedroom. So Helen will find this and leave it. And she doesn't just... I mean, she demonstrates them. What on earth? What on earth? Who would do that? Who would do that?
Well, I mean, you can... I'm really hard on Sarah Treem. Picking on her and making jokes whenever I get a chance, but I'm trying to give her credit. But yeah, this is just so bad. This is Trevor and this, and it's just so bad, Michelle.
It's comical. I mean, it's just so over the top that it's just not even realistic. I cannot imagine a grandmother coming into the home and dumping sex toys out on the island, the kitchen island, and demonstrating them when the kid's walking out. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, plus, what's the strategy of how it would actually work? Noah plants a dildo in the room, and Helen finds it and then blames Sasha that he's got another woman's sex toys?
Or that he's just into kinky stuff, I guess, is what she was saying.
She, you know, really, you found, but they this, really think that's going to work?
I don't know.
I mean, Sasha has the right response when he finds the stuff in the room. He's like, wait a minute, what's this doing here? Like, he right away just points it out. That's what he would have done if Helen and him walked into the room totally without Noah there. What the hell is all this shit here? I wonder who put this here. And she would have believed him. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
There wouldn't have been a dun-dun-dun, aha, Sasha, right, you fiend.
Right.
I never dreamed you could be this terrible. I'm breaking up with you and rushing back to Noah. It's just stupid.
It is. Okay, so then Stacy comes out and she doesn't want to go because she doesn't like Sasha suddenly. He says mean things about Noah and basically just calls him a loser. And she's like, don't be nice to him. So Noah decides, okay, I'll go with Margaret's dastardly plan, right? So he shows up in his gorilla maintenance outfit, and Stacy goes skipping off to her mom and Sasha, who she just said she didn't like. And Noah sneaks into Sasha's bedroom and puts, oh, and Noah's standing there looking at him too. It's like Sasha has his family, is what he's, I think, seeing there. He puts the sex toys out, then he catches himself in the mirror, and he puts them all back in the toolbox, and he throws the toolbox in the trash. He goes to the bar, and he gets a drink, and then Erica is there, And she's like heavy flirting with him and saying that the tea is that Noah was banned from the set because he was flirting with Sasha Mann's girlfriend.
Yeah, okay, Michelle. How does Erica not know that Noah and Helen were once married?
Yeah, how would she not, considering that's what the whole movie's about? It's not
why
even just...
Why is she there? Why is she there, even?
Right.
She's the consultant because she adds the ex-wife input. Because she's the ex-wife, you topless idiot.
Well, after Noah drinks, he glances back at Erica and decides to go over to her. And I thought, why? Why?
You've been too much of a gentleman.
Right.
Take my bra off.
And then he just leaves her there.
Well, what's he going to do? Take her with him?
No, he leaves her there naked at this party with kids.
She loved it.
She was naked at a party with kids. Oh, and by the way, did you hear? She's like, don't be gone long. I'm cold. Because that little scrap of material, right, was really keeping her toasty.
Or she would have been warmer if he stayed there with her outside with her bra off.
Well. So then Sasha and Helen, he goes in the bedroom and he puts it under the pillow. And Sasha and Helen come in and catch him, of course. Sasha finds the bra, asks Helen if it's hers, and Helen calls Noah a name. She just looks at him like, unbelievable. Yeah. So that was the end of Noah's sexcapades. And then we go to part two, which is Whitney. And Whitney and Colin are in bed, and he's trying to be playful, but he's also asking her the questions related to his immigration quiz thing.
So, Michelle, as a courtesy to you,
yes,
I watched an episode of 90 Day Fiancé.
Did you?
And never before, Michelle, have I seen such a raggedy collection of mutants.
Well, you can't just watch one.
Yeah, that's all. I didn't even make it through one.
You have to start at the beginning.
I watched episode one, season one, episode one, for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I thought it was a walking collection of mutants.
Okay, well, that's not nice, first of all.
They're
idiots. Like real people.
42-year-old women, 24-year-old man, 58-year-old man, 20-year-old woman. It's green card city. It's this whole thing about what you do to get a green card. They're going for 6 weeks to see people in another country, and they've never spoken on the phone. Some of them.
Oh, yeah, some of them are absolutely.
They leave their kids for 6 weeks to go see. Oh, and my kids are my life. My kids are my love. But I'm going to leave them for 6 weeks to see a stranger. They're morons. They are morons, Michelle.
Well, there's another one, too, that's out now. It's called 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. And this is where, for whatever reason, usually the foreign fiance can't get an American visa to come over. And so they have to go there to live. And it is even more intense, if you can imagine.
Well, this one, in episode one, season one, the one guy goes to Brazil and gets into a machete fight with... and this guy's not John Rambo. He's like... Dudley Schnerdlich, some wimpy little guy who has his mom drive him to the airport. And by the way, Michelle, they pack like you do. This one dude took like 4 Foot Lockers with mosquito pants and urethra swimming fish condoms with him. He packed like his whole life with him to go meet somebody for the first time.
Well, I mean, if you're going to be gone for 6 weeks, you know.
It's all financially. It's a scam, man. When I married that girl from Sri Lanka, Michelle, it was a nightmare.
Did it not work out for you?
No, it's horrible.
I mean, I'm not saying you can't fall in love with somebody from another country, but...
I am.
Well, Whitney disagrees with you.
Well, we're going to see. Sarah Treem, you're going to be surprised by Colin.
And what does she mean by that?
I don't know. She doesn't say. But I think Colin's going to be bad news.
You think?
We already see little hints of him being bad news.
We do. So Whitney has to leave. She takes her electric scooter to work. and immediately has to clean up the vomit on the sidewalk.
Well, what about Colin leaving, using up the coffee? They're late on their bills and he's not working. He could find work. He could walk up to somebody on a construction job and say, hey, man, can I do something for you? He could find work and not get caught.
Doesn't have a visa. I mean, he doesn't have work.
You don't need a visa to get it. Look at all the undocumented immigrants. They don't have visas. What do you think they're doing for work?
I don't know. But yeah, he's not doing anything. You're right.
And he's using up resources. He's using up the coffee and not even going to get more. That's nerve-wracking.
Well, and it's really different, too, because, I mean, as we'll see in a little bit, Whitney pours wine and he walks in and she, like, freaks out about it and pours it out and kind of runs away. We, by everybody else's account, she drinks in front of him. So that's odd that she feels like that, and that's not everybody else's perception of it.
I think it's another, I always bring up alcohol being like a pivotal scene changing event. Sarah Treem uses that a lot. I mean, she uses it later when what's her name? Helen has a glass of wine at 10 in the morning with Whitney.
Evidently, Whitney thinks her mom's an alcoholic. And I didn't really catch that before, but she said that to Noah. Noah's like, you remind me of your mother.
Right.
Yeah. But she asks him, she wants to come by and see his work, but he says he's not ready for her to see what he's been doing.
Yeah, he's being dishonest. He's being less than open with her.
Not only that, he rolls his eyes as he turns around. Like, get off this, Whitney, which was real off-putting to me. And then we see Whitney at the studio, and she's struggling and sweating and trying to get a painting in the right place.
You know, people in San Francisco... Sorry, Michelle, I keep interrupting you.
Okay.
You were talking about she had to clean the vomit from the side. They literally have to do that in Sacramento and San Francisco, where bums sleep on the street in front of people's workplaces, and they have to hose off the sidewalk from defecation and bodily functions, and they have to kick the people out of the doorways. And so...
When did that start, though? That hasn't always been a thing, has it?
Last Thursday. It's all the welcome to our, you know, I don't know what they call it. I don't even know how to be politically correct, but get free resources. You don't need a green card. You don't need to be a citizen. You don't need to have a job. You can take drugs on the street.
We'll give you
clean syringes.
Okay, I do not understand the drug thing. I don't understand that. I don't understand how it's okay to drop dirty needles on streets. I do not get that. Not here, not there, not anywhere.
Well, they do.
I know. And that should be criminal because, I mean, people could get hurt from that easily. That's just insane.
You could probably get hurt from vomit on the sidewalk. You know, what if your kid runs through there and gets sick? Gets a germ. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, runs through it and slips and falls, you know? I don't know. That's craziness. But the needle thing really just...
They're talking about, like, bubonic plague coming from all the rats, from all the refuse and garbage on the streets of Los Angeles, that the fleas that live off those rats carry bubonic plague, that's making a resurgence in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has, like, 60,000 people on the streets.
That is insane. That's insane. Yeah, also
and it is all drug. If you took a diagnosis of all those 60,000 people, like 90% of them would have mental health or abuse problems. Not just people being slobs, being free. They have like problems that keep them there. A normal person would want to go to a shelter where you have a bed and a sink and a shower and be somewhat clean and healthy.
Yeah, I'm lost with that. That's just so sad.
So anyway, Whitney's at her office getting ready for work.
Right. she gets a message from Colin saying that the immigration also asked them something about their rent or something like that. The phone rings. She runs to get it. It rings again. What's her name? Andrea, the gallery owner, says that if she had finished the website, you wouldn't have to spend so much time on the phone. She's just real belittling and ugly to Whitney.
All right, Michelle, there's a couple more nitpicks I have.
Okay.
Okay, why did that hanging the picture on the wall scene take 3 freaking minutes long? Why did it take so long? And why is it tiring Whitney out to hang a picture?
It's probably heavy.
Not that heavy. If it's that heavy, she can't lift it. If it's heavy, if it's easy enough for her to lift it, she's not going to be out of breath. It's fucking stupid. I get it's hot in there, and it's probably a little bit hard to lift it up and hold it while the stupid lady determines if it's in a good spot. But it's stupid.
Well, it's Whitney showing how the suffering she's going through, I think.
I know, but we don't need to have her gasping for breath and sweating to death.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen her look like that since, she was with, what's his name, Scotty. Remember when she, like, looked really, really rough? And then, according to her, she looks like this again?
Well, Whitney says she needs to work there because they need the money, but she's not even getting money. What? It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah, what's up with that? She mentions payroll, and Andrea says there's tons of people who would do this just for the access.
Yeah, payroll. I'm the only one. Roll me some money. It's like payroll. You owe me money, bitch. I've worked for 4 weeks and you haven't paid me since last time and you were late last time. Where's my money?
Right.
And she just says, oh, you're lucky to be here. Many people would work here for the experience for free. But Whitney stays there because she needs the money. It just doesn't add up. The story doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's an excuse so she can do what she ends up doing, I think.
I guess.
So Fur Cat walks in, and Andrea rushes over to him, and he calls, and she's just, like, so over the top, and he talks about how it's too hot in there, and she, oh, we're installing something. He calls Whitney Cinderella.
Fur Cat. Well, why is Whitney... Okay, Whitney's charmed by him. She sneaks a couple smiles in between all of her... I hate that he's here. She's charmed by him still.
Yeah, I didn't get that right there. That's very good that you did. I got that kind of disgusted smile from her right there. But, I mean, I think you're right. But that's
so
just
not...
So much
for Colin, Michelle. This is death of Colin right here. Even if he turns into a perfect gentleman... She has this weird, unhealthy thing for Fur Cat. I don't think it's just monetary. I think she's charmed by him.
Yeah, I absolutely didn't get that right there. But I do think you're right. And then he goes into continuing the Cinderella theme that he needs a date for tomorrow night. He's got a showing coming up down the road. And Whitney's blowing him off. And he makes it a point, seeing how Andrea has responded to him, to say, you can bring someone.
Yeah, he's a manipulative fuck. He's a terrible person.
He's horrible.
And he does it again to her. Whatever he did to her the first time, he physically battered her, right?
First time? Yeah, he did. Yes.
So he's abusive again in another way to her in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, he's forcing her hand with something with this boss that evidently she can't quit this job because she needs the money, and yeah. And so he's using that against her.
Okay, when he shakes Andrea's hand, he licks his hand first or kisses his own hand.
He kissed his own hand. I don't know. I've never seen that before. Was that horrible?
Charmed.
That was horrible.
He's got a nice tattoo on his neck, though. I got to give him credit for that.
What is that? Like the veins in your neck?
It's like a spider web or something. I don't know. He's Fur Cat, man.
He is Fur Cat. Fur Cat says he knows that they didn't part on the best of terms, but he's here to make it up to her.
Michelle, when you're Fur Cat, you don't even need a costume for Halloween. You go as Fur Cat.
He says that the gallery art is livid with pain as he walks out the door. I mean, he's just, like, so demeaning, which you can't help but like a little bit because Andrea is so horrible.
Yeah, it was good to see Andrea get a little bit of her own medicine.
So Whitney goes into the house and she is tired. She's had a day, and she gets this dingy glass of wine out, and Colin comes in. This is where she pours it out, like, nope, I don't need that. I'll just have coffee to wake up. And so she goes to get the coffee, and we find out that Colin hadn't gotten the coffee, and he's only there because he was napping anyway. And she goes, it's okay. I'll just take a shower to wake up. You know, so just...
Would wine wake you up?
It doesn't wake me up, but... I think she wanted to calm down, and then she's like, no, I'll just wake up. Maybe she wanted to take a nap, but Colin was in the bed napping.
Well, she needs to stay awake to work on the website. Michelle, it would take you 20 minutes to add an address and a phone number to a web page on a website. Even to add a few images of pictures of the art, it would take like less than an hour. It would be really fast and easy. They didn't even have enough art pieces in that place to cover one wall. They had like 6 pieces of art waiting to be hung up. She could have whipped that website out in no time flat.
I guess. I mean, I'm assuming that there is a website already. If she's not having to like create it from nothing, that can't be done. And no, I mean, I'm sure it can. I couldn't do it in 20 minutes.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe she's from scratch making a website, but.
But she's being kind of short with Colin here, right? Because he's reading a book and she says, must be nice to have time to read.
I wouldn't call that being short with him. I would call that being honest.
Well, it is honest, but it's bitchy, right? I mean, she don't have to say that when he's just making conversation. Her patience is run thin with him, and I
understand
call it
bitchy. I would call it I would call it, Michelle, you're getting me all twisted up here.
Sorry.
I would call it being like presenting your own case in one half of the relationship. Like, look, dude, I'm working all day. You're not doing shit. You're taking naps. You're using up all the coffee.
And well, she kind of does do that in a minute. And I think that's fine to have that conversation with him. And I think she should. And I think it's long overdue. But when somebody says, oh, this book is great, and you come back with, must be nice to have time to read, that's just bitchy.
Maybe.
If you have a problem, say what the problem is. You don't need to take it out like that. But that's just my take after living, you know, decades and dealing with people.
I've never done that, so maybe that's insight you have over me, Michelle.
Right.
No, I'm not being a smarmy smartass. Maybe it is. I would be... I applaud Whitney for being even a little sarcastic.
Well, sarcasm's never good if you care about the relationship. I mean, it's warranted. It's defensible in her situation. But it's, in place of blowing up, better to have just a conversation. But he's like, so is everything okay? And then she's like, what did you do all day? You were napping. And why can't I see your stuff? And then, okay, so I'm watching this with Jillian. She's my youngest daughter, who's grown. She's 22. But Colin says they should get married and get it over with so he can work. And this just freaks Whitney out. Now, Jillian's watching this, and she's like, okay, I felt bad for Whitney up until this point. If he can work, if they get married, and they're going to get married anyway, why not just go get married, and then they can still do the wedding?
Well, I think that's expository for us as the audience in this show. Whitney... No, now means no always, Michelle. She doesn't want to marry this guy.
Well, that's not what she says, though.
That's
she's like,
she's
I'm looking
doing,
forward
though.
To this. Yeah.
She wants a wedding and a big house. And, you know, that's maybe the story, but that's, I don't think, the real story. I don't think she wants this guy.
Well, and it's bad enough that she has to plan it in 3 months. She feels like she's already being put out in every way by him.
He may not murder her, Michelle, but this romance is dead.
Okay, so what about then she gets back in bed after this pretty nasty little back and forth, and he wants to practice some more interview questions. And she's like traumatized by doing this all the time. And she's pointed it out to Noah before, I can't even sleep because it's all he wants to do is do this.
And then maybe it's her method of survival. It's rote, just the rote of being a partner with this guy. It's easier to go along and get along than to fight and kick him out on the couch and her go on the couch or her storm out. Or it's just easier. She's exhausted.
She is exhausted, but she's traumatized by having to do that. He's asking her questions. Okay, first of all, I watched it again with Mike, my husband, and it's like, how many cousins do I have? And I looked at Mike, I said, how many cousins do you have? I have no idea. I said, how many cousins do I have? I said, I don't even know how many cousins I have. I mean, it's just like...
too specific?
It's that, but it's also... and maybe they would ask that. Maybe you could count on... I don't know. But it's just, she's traumatized by answering this. She's like... 13, she's just like laying there. And I mean, he doesn't even tune into the fact that she is distraught. He's just like oblivious to it. And then later on, she's trying to sleep and she tries to get some space because he is literally smothering her. He literally is like up against her and has his arm thrown like almost across her, you know, body. He's smothering her.
Yeah, that's a message to us. A message I got a long time ago. Colin is not going to be with Whitney.
But then we see Whitney with Helen, and Helen's showing her this house of somebody who owed Sasha a favor, so now she gets to decorate the house. And Whitney has tons of ideas because there's no budget, and Helen's so proud of Whitney that she goes up to her and hugs her. And then Helen starts talking to her about when she was her age, which is 24, she worked in a bagel factory so Noah could write in England, where she followed him because it was what he wanted to do. She wishes she hadn't done that and had spent more time doing her own thing. And then this is where Helen starts to drink. And Whitney points out it's 10 a.m. And Helen's like, shrugs like, yeah. She asks Helen how she's doing financially, presumably because she's going to ask her for money, and Helen lets it drop that things are really hard, and she's in jeopardy of losing everything, including the kids' school. And Whitney's like, oh, well, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah, so, Michelle, Helen's redecorating a house of one of Sasha's friends or something, somebody related to Sasha in the movie industry, right? This really affluent...
right.
Person's place. They have the perfect scenario here for a business deal that would benefit both of them. Whitney needs better business sense. She's a good decorator. She's literally able to point stuff out. Oh, this over here, a piece of art, this piece of art here, this piece of art there. But she has a deal staring her in the face, Michelle. She could help her stupid art shop boss by placing some of those pieces right into this home where her mom needs them. And it's a home where there's likely unlimited funds to put decorating and art into play and solve both problems elegantly and to both her and her mom's financial benefit.
Yeah, but she's 24.
So
I mean,
what?
Who would even listen to her, maybe?
So they're going to listen to Helen, make it Helen's right. Idea. They have the solution to both of their problems right in the palm of their hand and they don't see it. Instead, maybe Sarah Treem didn't see it either. This is where she turns to the alcohol theme again, and she has Helen uncork a bottle of wine.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
As a person seeing these problems they each have with the solution, the problem of the one is the solution of the other, and they match dovetail together.
That's not where we're seeing it lead, I don't think, though. Because if they did that, then they would have, like, you know, reason to stay in California. And I don't think that's...
Well, I agree that conflict resolution does not make for more drama, which is probably what they're after. So you're right about that.
So Whitney goes into work, and she's apologizing for being late. And Andrea strong-arms Whitney into going to Furcat's thing this night. And so we see Whitney at home, and she's getting all dolled up. And could Colin be a bigger butt?
Michelle, you're pretty hard on the men in this show.
You were harder on Colin than I am. But, I mean, come on. She's like, how do I look? And he's like, you look like somebody else. And she's like, yeah, I'm glad. I mean, what's that? He mocks where she's going. He's belittling. He's minimizing everything she's doing. And then when he finds out it's Furcat, so presumably He doesn't know anything about Furcat except him as an artist. He doesn't know that this is Whitney's old boyfriend.
Well, he knows Furcat's a pedophile. Somehow.
Well, that's what he calls him. Yeah.
But is that because he's going after Whitney or because of something else he's heard?
I would think it has to be something else because I don't think he would have been okay with Whitney going.
Well, why? Okay. As a guy, I'm living with a girl and that girl gets all dolled up after working all day and she's getting ready to go out and he doesn't even say to her, "Hey, baby, where are we going? What are you getting dressed up for? I didn't know we were going out." He just assumes she's going out without him. Because halfway through this discussion, he says, "I don't think I was even invited." Right. Like, he doesn't say that at the beginning. Like, where are you going and where are we going? You know, you assume if you're a couple and one half of the couple's getting ready to do something, that you're going to do something with that other half of the couple.
Well, right, unless something was said way ahead of time.
But it
you
wasn't.
Know, like, hey, right.
Well, I don't know it wasn't, but I don't think it was.
Well, it wasn't because she didn't know about it till today. So there's no way it was.
So what's the math with that?
I don't know. But he's accusing Whitney of liking this anyway, where Whitney says she doesn't. But I think Whitney kind of does. What do you think?
Of course she does, yeah. She likes being... She's slave labor for this Andrea bitch.
Right.
So she likes being elegant labor, I guess. Or being perceived as an attractive woman that Colin's not giving her.
You know? So Andrea and Whitney go into this thing, and Andrea is being like
arm
gushy.
In arm? Why do they go arm in arm, Michelle?
I don't. Girls do that sometimes.
Girl you hate, you walk in arm with her?
Well, I mean, she grabbed her arm. I think Whitney was just glad not to be like... Whitney was glad there was air conditioning. I don't know. And then Furcat is like over the top. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's like... He immediately spies her. He comes up, Whitney Soloway, the one who got away. And he introduces her to this Dashiell. A very important collector... And Andrea immediately grabs him and walks away.
Do I have to find Bill Simmons to say the word Dashiell for you, Michelle? By the way, that was Bill Simmons' podcast that had the LaCroix. I got to give him credit. I listen to him a lot. He's good.
What's the podcast?
Well, he has a number of them. They're mostly about sports and stuff, but he does like TV. He's like a West Coast project on a huge scale. But yeah, he does culture on TV and sports and... Bill Simmons. He was a writer for ESPN. He's like friends with Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla and all those guys.
Okay. Sounds cool.
But anyway. Furcat unleashes this friend, Dashiell. Just think like Dashiell Hammett. Dashiell on Andrea. Actually, she injects herself, I guess, right? Andrea injects herself.
She grabs him and, like, she knows who he is, and she, like, goes away with him, you know, talking to him about stuff. The Furcat tells Whitney that he's opening a gallery. Dashiell's opening a gallery in New York, and Furcat hopes to be his inaugural artist. And then he looks at Whitney and says he'll need an assistant. And then Furcat says he wants to show her something, and Whitney goes into the last time he wanted to talk, this didn't go so well, and all this kind of stuff.
So how come Whitney has no shred of agency at all? She can't say no. No, Andrea, I'm not going to this frickin' party. If she really didn't want to go, they made it look like she didn't want to go, but Andrea had leverage on her to go. So that must mean she either wanted to go, which might be very true, or she has zero agency at all. So do we believe that she has no control, no agency over her own life, or that she really wants to do this stuff? Because when Furcat says, "Hey, come with me," she could say, "Fuck you, no, I'm going to have a glass of champagne over here." She goes with him like she has no control.
Yeah, I think she feels like she doesn't have any control. I feel like she's kind of swept along. She feels like she's kind of swept along with circumstances.
Either that or she wants to go. It's hard to believe she has no control because she's semi-tough Whitney. She used to be like bitchy and tough and fuck off. I'm not. She tries to tell him she's not going to the party.
Okay, but so was Helen, too. And then Helen turned into this meek, I don't know what to do kind of person as well. I don't know. I think you could be. I mean, it's very convoluted the way they show it to us, because she ends up, you're right, she goes with him because she wants to, but then she's talked into stuff that she doesn't want to. So I don't know.
Well, she's highly manipulated. She's embarrassed into certain things. And like, all those nudes were of her, right?
That's what I assumed, yeah.
Because that's what he did with her when he was her boyfriend back two seasons ago.
I thought he didn't. I thought that they said back then he didn't. Like, she wanted to be, a model, but he didn't. But, I mean, that's what I took, is that that was him. But she's like, I never got an apology. And then what's up with that apology? I mean, he goes like prostrate in the floor. Please forgive me. He's like crying. What's up with that?
And why does it turn her on? She like gets into it.
I mean, she acts like she was just embarrassed. I don't know if it turned her on.
Well, they kiss at the end of it to the crowd cheering.
He kisses her. I think it's just like this theatric. Nah,
she's turned on. And the next scene, she's lounging on the couch with Dashiell. She's been won over again by Furcat.
Well, obviously. But
she's 100% in for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hate to think that, but I think you're right. Everyone's through the glass is cheering, and Furcat takes a bow. The whole thing was just like theatrics to him. So you're right. Then she's talking to Dashiell and how he knows Furcat, who is Lindsay, as they smoke pot. And she sees some women dancing, and she's kind of like watching them. And he's like, do you, you know, you should go join them. And she's like, no. And he's like, you just like to watch. And she's like, yeah. And he goes, me too. And then she talks about how she wanted to be a model for Furcat when she was young. But now she wants to be the one who, you know, does the looking in place of the one in the pictures. And then he asked her the question of the night. If she could have everything, what would it look like? And she goes into this thing that someone would give her the money to start a gallery for new artists. And she goes into this, you know, kind of like overlooked artists who are using their passion and something that speaks to them and speaks to her. And he says her thoughts are beautiful.
Yeah, she sounds really smart about it. She's like convinced if an art studio owner needed to be convinced, this would be the type of answer that would convince him. Like, oh, what a genius insight. I want your expertise in my gallery because you would direct it in a very intelligent way and get viewership and people to come and all that.
Well, sure, she has passion for what she's saying, and we all know how attractive like passion is, right? So for sure. So Furcat comes up and pulls Whitney away. She's so beautiful. He's really missed her, and they start to make out, right? And all that was stuff presumably she wanted to do. But then in the middle of it, Dashiell comes in to watch, and Whitney's horrified by it. And Furcat tells Whitney that Dashiell could give her a gallery. And I think she's going to stop, right? She acts like she's going to stop this, but then she doesn't.
Yeah, but the very fact that she leaves with Furcat before Dashiell walks in on them, she was going to be with Furcat.
Right.
So it's pretty clear that Dashiell and Furcat set this up. Like, Furcat says to Dashiell, hey, I'll give you a cool hot scene with me and a hot girl, but I want you to consider me to be in your gallery. And Dashiell says, oh, maybe, we'll see how. So Furcat's setting Whitney up to be the hot girl. But Whitney goes along with Furcat of her own volition to, for whatever reason, some desire.
Well, she does, but she doesn't know this. She doesn't know she's part of this pawn.
Doesn't need to be. That's not my point. She's going with him to be with him.
Right. until he comes in, and then she does know. Then she knows, I think.
But why does she go with him in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, so what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, I think she's going to end up back in New York with her own gallery, is what I think. What do you think?
Could very well be under, even though it's weird because she probably could run a gallery, but she's going to get the gallery because of Dashiell's largesse and giving it to her for letting him see her with Furcat.
Yeah, but she's going to get the gallery. My projection is she's going to get the gallery and she's going to be wildly successful.
Do you think Furcat really wanted to be with Whitney, or do you think he wanted her to be a pawn in this ploy with
Dashiell? Well, I mean, look at how the women are responding to him. He could have a woman, pretty much any of them, right? Or more than one,
yeah,
presumably, the way they're showing it. So I think it has to be, I don't know if it's just he wants to conquer her. I don't know.
Well, you Andrea know? doesn't seem like Andrea has anything that Furcat needs, like the stupid gallery she has. So he's not trying to win over Whitney because she's with Andrea and their stupid gallery. It's all Whitney's for some reason. Yeah, I don't know. Conquering the one that got away. Like, he literally almost says that. Can't have one getting away. I got to conquer her. Go back, conquer her, then move on to the next one.
Right. But Whitney goes into her apartment with her lipstick still smudged all the way across her face. I mean, presumably, she had to, like, get home some way. Would you not at least wipe your face before you did that? Her eyeliner's, you know, down to her nose, underneath her eyes. But she immediately goes to bed and snuggles Colin. And then she's just got this completely traumatized and tormented look on her face. I mean,
yeah, I think Colin's just empty comfort, though. It's just, this is my cave. I'll recoil here and figure out plan B.
I guess, but damn, Whitney, take a shower before you get in bed with him. That's horrible. And then we go to part three, which is Joni. So, what'd you think about Joni?
I tried to do some math on Joni and those gravestones, but it's Joni's story hasn't really progressed very much. She's well, I guess we could do the math, but she's cleaning up Allison out of her life because Allison abandoned her because she thinks she committed suicide and left her behind. So somehow that truth has to come out to educate her as to what really happened.
Okay, but I don't know. I think it's deeper than that, and I'm just not getting it. She wakes up in her dad's bed. She tries to turn the lights on. She gets up, and she goes to fix the solar panels. Then she comes back in, and the lights just come on. And she starts cleaning up, and we don't know what year it is. We don't know how long Cole has been gone, but it looks like nobody has lived there for a while. And suddenly she's there and she's cleaning up.
I think we do know, Michelle, though, like within a year or within months of the time, I think we know. Because, okay, so Cole's grave is 79 to 2053.
Right.
Which, by the way, would have made Cole 74 years old when he died. So we could almost assume Cole didn't kill himself or die in some dramatic way. He might have just died. He might have just passed away.
Yeah, I think he died because she's thrown away a lot of medicines and stuff. So I think they gave us a clue to that.
So, by the way, Michelle, another gravestone, Gabriel Lockhart, 1953 to 89. Did we know another Gabriel besides, was that Allison's grandfather or somebody? Or couldn't have been 1953 to 89.
That would have been Cole's dad. His name was Gabriel, too.
Okay. Scotty, 1982 to 2017. So Scotty was 35 when he got run over. We know from Sarah Treem that Joni's 38 or 37. So if you subtract 2053, the Cole's gravestone, if you subtract 38, that's 2015. That would have been about the time Well, Joni was 7 when Allison died.
Right. So but it might, only been 30 years prior.
So it might be 6 or 7 years since Cole died. Might be like 2060 at this time. We know Joni's 38, so...
I don't know how you're doing the math with
Well,
that.
if we know Joni's 38 and we know it's 2053, then we know Joni was born in 2015. But Joni was 7 when Allison... It shows Allison's death, right? What's Allison's gravestone say? We don't know. We don't see Allison's gravestone.
No, I mean, I couldn't read these on any of the gravestones. I tried to look. I don't know.
I'm telling you.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you. I didn't see that. So
Cole is 1979 to 2053. So if he died like within a year, it's 2053. And Allison and Joni is 38. If you just subtract that, it means Joni was born in 2015.
But Joni wasn't born in 2015.
Right, so it's a little bit longer than 2053.
It has to be longer than that because the graveyard is flooded. Nobody lives here anymore. So you're not going to get, like, buried in a graveyard. Even if Cole were, like, presumably one of the last people there, you're not going to get buried in a flooded graveyard.
Right.
I don't know.
So here's my math. I don't think Joni was born in 2015. I think she was 7 years old in 2015. So that means it's 7 years past 2053. So it's about 2060. It's about 7 years since Cole died.
That would seem more likely to me.
Because Allison died close to the time Joni was 7. Or
right.
Joni was 7 when Allison died.
Right.
And that was, you know... That would leave a few more years past 2053 to be the present time for Joni.
So Joni's like 45?
No, she's 38.
No, if she was 38, she would have been born in 2015. And I thought we just said she was born before that. I don't know. I don't think they're very... I could be wrong, but I don't think they're very careful with these dates.
Well, maybe we're wrong in subtracting 38 from 2053. Because Cole didn't die. And not that it even matters if it's 2053 or 2060 or whatever. But we know Joni's 38 because Sarah Treem says it. She's the same age as Allison when she died.
Right. Yeah, I don't... Which sets up a whole other thing. But also, we had a time where they showed Gabriel's gravestone with two different dates on it.
Yeah.
Which was something that made it seem like this wasn't even real. But she's throwing away all this stuff, right? She's throwing away the medicine, which shows us that Cole was sick, which is important. But then she goes over there and... Okay, we also find out that Cole has literally, like... never done anything else with his life, right? He kept a shrine to Allison there. So presumably he never married anybody else or anything because he has a shrine almost set up for her. And she throws away all this stuff. Then she starts throwing away Cole's personal stuff. All this stuff that has all this meaning, at least to us, all of his dad's letters from Nan and all that kind of stuff, the postcard that Cole took to California. And then she gets Gabriel's wooden trunk out, and she opens it up. Now, she'd have to have heard of Gabriel. She would have to have heard of him and knew about him. And she just tosses it in the trash.
Well, I think that's Mom cared about Gabriel, but she didn't care about me. So I'm throwing that punk's ass out.
That was painful. Then she goes to getting Cole's Jeep, but it won't start. And even though she can, like, wire the solar panels to work, she can't figure out how to get the Jeep to work. But then she, who does not want to be like Allison at all, gets on Allison's bike, whose tires are completely pumped and have not dry rotted, and drives away with her backpack and goes to the gravesite. And that's all we know.
Yep. So she cares about Cole. So she does care about Cole. So Cole must have interacted with her. She must have seen Cole in all those 38 years, or do you think she's just remembering him?
No, I think she grew up in that house, would be what I would think. That was her father. What else would she have done? I think she grew up there. That's why none of this makes any sense. She acts like she's seeing this stuff for the first time, and it just doesn't make any sense because we know she's not.
So her throwing away the pictures was like, I finally get to throw these away. I had to look at these for years and years, and even though I hated my mother, I had to endure my dad keeping these pictures out while I came to visit and growing up here.
Right.
Or do you think Cole set that all up after Joni grew up and became 18 and moved away, that he set up the shrine to Allison?
No, I think Cole was obsessed from the time he came back from his walkabout. That's just a guess, but that's what I would think.
Yeah, I don't blame the technology. I mean, I don't think the Jeep would have a glimmer of life after 20 years of no battery. I don't think it would have even the click, click, click.
But it wouldn't be 20 years. We don't know how long he's been gone. That's what we just were trying to figure out, you know? But the solar panels were still working.
Those would always work, though.
I guess.
The wire, putting the wire back, would solar panels have no moving parts, nothing to wear out. The batteries they're connected to might not do well after a long time. But yeah, that is, you're right, that is the mystery. How long since 2053 is it at this point?
And how was her life with her dad? You know, was it just like a constant, you know, what's the word? Did he constantly talk about Allison and talk her up and make Joni feel like, I don't know.
Well, Louisa raised Joni, too. So Louisa, he wouldn't have just ranted and raved about Allison. Yeah, why no pictures of Louisa?
Because they weren't together anymore.
I know, but he wasn't together with Allison anymore.
No, but he wanted to be. I don't know.
I mean, I've had relationships where I've broken up. I don't keep pictures of the people around.
He didn't just break up with Allison, though. I mean, he was always in love with Allison. I think we see that Cole's whole life was ruined. Cole, I mean, he was ruined. He died presumably alone in this broken down, you know, house in an area that was being at least starting to become unlivable. I mean, look at the house. The pictures on the wall are like crooked and stuff. It's dirty. And I mean, yeah, it can get dirty if it sets for years and stuff like that, but
might not take long even. They're on Long Island on a beach. Storms go through there. I mean, who knows what kind of disrepair the windows and wind blowing through there and stuff.
Sure.
And it's also like climate change, so it could be like a thunderstorm every day or every other day.
So, did you watch the next ones?
No. What do you got, Michelle?
Okay. Next week, someone is saying this is Helen's debut as Sasha Mann's girlfriend. Some girl says to Helen, "Way to glow up, Helen," which I didn't know what that meant, so I asked Jillian, my youngest daughter, and she explained to me that if a girl is, like, not attractive at one point and then gets attractive as she grows up, they call it glowing up. So definitely out of the loop. Sierra's bringing Eddie to Helen, but because she's desperate, and Helen says that she needs to figure it out. Someone is asking Sierra who Helen is, and Sierra refers to her as her second mother. Noah is telling Helen he deserves a second chance, and she says that he's not a second chance, and she doesn't love him anymore. And then Priya is distraught and saying to Helen that she has everyone fooled. And, I mean, presumably to Helen. And a car wrecks into a big dumpster, dump truck type of thing. So,
sounds dramatic. Sounds like some big changes coming, Michelle.
And this whole figure it out, that's really annoying me. I mean, it's like being said all the time in this. And, you know, it's just like, Helen said it to Margaret, too. She's like, you know, your father has dementia, and I'm going to need some help. And Helen's like, you're grown. Figure it out. I mean, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. That's something you would say to a kid who's working on a math problem. Hey, you need to figure that out so you can learn it. You don't say that to somebody who comes to you when they're hurting. Sierra goes to her because she's struggling, and Helen's like, figure it out. Figure it out. And, I mean, that's just so ugly, you know?
Yeah, to a degree, it's tough on the person. But sometimes, I mean, Sierra does need to figure shit out. She can't just flit through life, the trust fund baby, and getting everything handed to her. She's a mother. She chose what she's got.
Yeah, I just don't like the flippant figure it out when
somebody's
struggling.
If after the 15th time of bringing over the little runt kid to be satisfied by Helen, though, she's still in her house every day. I mean, come on, you gotta figure it out.
I just think you could say it nicer. I don't disagree that people need to figure stuff out, but I don't know. Something about that's really bugging me in this series.
All right, Michelle, six left. We'll see how they all figure it out.
Or not. Okay, so what do you think we're going to be? Where do you think we're headed still? Back to New York?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's what the story is pointing to. I don't know where they're going to go in Montauk now that everything's kind of devastated.
Well, it's not yet.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, Helen's getting more entrenched into Los Angeles.
Who knows, man? But she's also saying she doesn't have any money and may not be able to keep the kids in school. And this is a new thing, right, with everybody, like, suffering for money, except evidently Noah's loaded now, right, because he's got this movie being made about his book.
Maybe, unless somehow they screw him out of that because it becomes Sasha's story and he gets, like, no credits or something.
Maybe that's how Noah redeems himself. He saves everybody financially.
How would he do that?
I don't know. He saves Margaret and Bruce's house, and he ends up getting Whitney the gallery. I don't know. Remember, he asked her if she needed some help, which is funny, because he asked her if she needed some help financially, and she said no. And then she kind of went to her mom to say, I need help financially. And her mom's like, I mean, she didn't say that, but that's what she was going to say, presumably. And Helen was like, oh, I'm struggling.
The only thing I project is that Noah and Helen will be somehow reconciled to some degree.
You think?
Yeah, because Sasha's with Helen, and Sasha's just a whitewashed Noah. He's a Noah V2.0. He's the Noah that Helen wanted, without any faults. But there are some faults to Sasha. And to me, that proves Helen's still in love with Noah, or the type of man that Noah is, the man that Noah was, or she thought she wanted in a man, or however you want to put those words together. And Sasha isn't going to be that. He's going to screw up. He's going to reveal something. I mean, Sarah Treem even says so much. I don't know if she meant Sasha will surprise us in a good way, but usually surprise you, that character will surprise you. That usually means something negative.
Oh, I thought it meant something positive. That's funny.
Because Sasha already appears white, knight in white shining armor-ish to me. So surprising to me would be he's not that.
Let me ask you, though. If you love somebody, right, do you think that people who genuinely love somebody, no matter what happens in the relationship or in life, do you think that they always love them?
Yes, to a certain degree.
I think so, too. I think that's it's not a real popular opinion, but I think that. I don't think if you're with somebody for, like, however long, a year, whatever, give or take, and you think you know the person, but you don't actually know the person, and you think you love them, and then you find out who they actually are, I don't think you love them necessarily because you didn't really love the real person. But anybody that you really love, I think that if you really love somebody, At least that's been my experience in life, that you love them no matter what happens. So maybe they're just kind of showing us that.
Yeah, too. I think you love somebody because they resolve something for you. They solve something for you. They give you an answer. They hear you. They get to know you in a way that you embrace. That you never lose that. You may not be thrilled to be with them at some point. You may even have disdain for them. But that love, that sense of resolve, like that person at one point in time knew me better than anyone else in the world, that you can never take away. You can never whitewash that away. And so I think all the, to some degree, all the characters in this are lost in some degree, and they're looking for ways to get that resolution, that solving of like, who am I and who really knows me in this world? And, you know, Allison was lost with Gabriel. She lost Gabriel and she could never solve that.
Right.
Noah was, I think he's lost because his manhood, he never measured up to a manhood that he thought he should be. He was never the great writer. He never got the credit for the writing. Bruce always kind of belittled him that someday you'll be, you know, the man that you can be, or you should try to be the man that you can be. And even Margaret in this episode says, ah, oh, finally, you're becoming closer to the man you should be, when he helps Stacy.
Right.
You know, Helen is lost as the little rich girl trying to find meaning, and she's not able to find it. And, you know, Joni, of course, with Allison, thinking Allison left her, is lost with that situation. But Noah and Helen had that resolution or had that connection at one point, and I think that never went away. And I think that's the last image we'll have of people connecting in this, as this season closes, that Helen and Noah have that connection, even if they're apart.
But Joni's horrible. I just have to say that. She's horrible. I don't like her as a character. I don't know what they did to little Joni in this. And they're going to have to show us like a whole lot to show us what changed sweet little Joni into this.
We know, though. She thinks she was abandoned by her mother.
Yeah, but, I mean, presumably she had a good life, though, right?
So what?
Or no.
Well, I mean, a good life meaning she was provided for?
She was provided for. She was wanted. She was loved. Louisa loved her. Cole loved her. Even Noah loved her.
Well, but the very first thing we started talking about in this is the generational trauma that you carry it with you, and she's carrying that Allison separation.
But she doesn't have to be that over the top. She's
well,
horrible.
Probably that's true, but that's the message with Joni. That's why she's terrible. She thinks she was abandoned by her mother, and she can't you can't resolve it when a person dies. You have to let it go. You can't resolve it. You can't ever settle it with that person.
That's true. But I hate her character.
All right, Michelle. We'll find out, or maybe we won't, but...
but we'll try. We'll watch.
Yep. So see you next time on 505.
Okay,
I'll put
Mike.
That Sarah Treem interview if you want to read it.
I'd love to.
It's a little interesting, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you then.
See you then.